Today is Monday, June 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Protests across the United States continue as Americans voice their outrage over the death of an African-American man.
George Floyd was killed like an animal, and we're tired.
While some of the protests have turned violent, civic leaders are calling for a calm and measured approach.
NAACP, we absolutely oppose rioting. That never solves anything.
Those stories and more are next. Unrest across America has followed what has been generally peaceful protests in the days after the death in Minneapolis of 46-year-old George Floyd, an African-American man who died after a white police officer held him down, pressing a knee into his neck for more than 8 minutes. At times, the protests turned violent, with police officers firing tear gas and using pepper spray.
Police are coming.
What you heard was just one example of the protests that have been taking place in Washington over the past 3 days. Curfews have been imposed in at least 25 cities, including Washington, and in 16 U.S. states. U.S. President Donald Trump is scheduled to meet virtually on Monday with state governors, law enforcement, and national security officials for what the White House calls a discussion on keeping American communities safe. President Trump is urging more states to call out the National Guard to halt the violent protests. And AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
The president's blaming the media and anarchists for fomenting violence and says liberal mayors and governors must get tougher, pointing to Minnesota's National Guard sharply cutting down on violent protests over the weekend. The Pentagon said Saturday it was ready to send active duty troops to Minneapolis if needed.
We can have troops on the ground very quickly if they ever want our military.
Active duty forces are normally banned from acting as a law enforcement agency in the U.S., but the Insurrection Act of 1807 offers an exception. It was last invoked in 1992 after the Rodney King trial led to massive riots in Los Angeles. There was no indication over the weekend the president intended to invoke the act. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Several nights in a row, violence has come close to home for the president, with authorities confronting protesters in Washington's Lafayette Square again on Sunday night. And firefighters put out a fire in the basement of historic St. John's Church across the street from the White House. Sunday night also brought a rare occurrence with the lights that typically shine outside the presidential residence turned off. Deidre O'Brien lives in Washington and was among the peaceful protesters out on Saturday.
I am here because Black lives do matter, and I am tired. George Floyd was killed like an animal, and we're tired. This is the norm. This is not something that's new. It's actually something that's been going on. It's been happening. And we're here just to say that we're tired of this, that Black lives matter, and we do to society.
Now, to understand more of what has been taking place in Washington, I spoke with VOA's Jason Patinkin. He was out in person this weekend covering the protests.
Well, I think the main thing is that both nights started out more or less peacefully with people wanting to be present at the White House, wanting to express their displeasure, their anger at police for these continued, you know, unabated killings of Black people in America. But both nights, things took a turn towards the more chaotic as the night went on. Tensions were very high between the protesters and the police, and it really didn't take much to get things set off. And then within a matter of an hour or less, you had tear gas being fired, things being lit on fire, windows being smashed, police beating people. It was really a nasty scene out there.
Where were you? I mean, as you're observing all this, where were you these two evenings? Because the protests in D.C. were throughout the district, including adjacent to the White House.
Yes. Yeah, so we were right there at the White House, in front of the North Lawn of the White House. The police have tried to block off certain areas at certain times, but basically it's all been right there in front of the White House. So it's been quite remarkable to see these clashes happening with the White House in full view in the backgrounds, the American flag, you know, waving in the wind and tear gas wafting through the air, the sound of explosions. It's really remarkable to see that type of unrest, that type of violence taking place right there within full view of the White House.
You also had the opportunity to speak to a few protesters, not only Saturday, but yesterday as well. And what are they saying about why they are coming out?
There is so much pent-up anger among so many people in America, whether it's black, whether it's white, whether it's brown, Latino, you name it. The crowd was mixed racially, and it's a very young crowd, and it's a crowd that is fed up with a system that, according to them, doesn't listen to them, doesn't hear their voices, doesn't hear their concerns and their complaints about this constant racial profiling of black people, this constant, frankly, killing of black people by authorities. So people said, look, we feel we don't have a choice unless we bring this to the front door of America, more or less, unless we bring this to the police themselves, nothing is going to change, and these killings won't stop.
Jason Patinkin is a reporter with VOA's English to Africa service. Shortly after Minnesota Governor Tim Walz called for an end to the violent protests that have rocked Minneapolis following George Floyd's death, he called for swift justice for the officers involved. One of the officers involved with the death of Floyd was arrested on Friday and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. I had the opportunity to speak with Derek Johnson, the president and CEO of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, over Skype that afternoon. I began our conversation by asking him why he thought the tragic event happened.
What is unfortunate is happening. We have in this country not dealt with the issues of race and the value of African-American lives. We commend the city, the police chief, and the mayor for taking aggressive actions. It is undisputable that the camera positionings gave us the facts of what was taking place.
Governor Tim Walz recently addressed the public, and he said that there would be a reckoning of the inequalities that led to this event. What does that look like to you, and what do you think needs to happen to bring about equality in terms of not only what's happening in Minnesota, but throughout the United States?
Well, last year, the NAACP, we issued an economic report on the city of Minneapolis, and we had a forewarning in there. If the gap in social mobility, economic opportunity was not closed in that city, it was like a powder keg. Something was bound to take place. And what we've seen this past week is that something taking place. It is not only what happened with the police murder of Mr. Floyd, is also the underlying economic conditions of that city that has been systemic and long-lasting.
What about elsewhere? Because this is not the only time this has happened in the U.S.
Well, unfortunately, we've seen this pattern for far too long. NAACP, 111 years old, from 1920 to 1933, we used to hang a flag out of our window say another man was lynched yesterday. We are at a point now that we have to hang out that flag once again on social media to say we're done dying, because far too often across the country, the value of the lives of those who are being victimized by law enforcement for all practical purposes is something that needs to be reevaluated, that we are equal under this Constitution, we are human, and there's a moral question here for many people to really grapple with, that we are as much citizens and human as anyone else in this country.
You mentioned the hashtag We Are Done Dying here, and that you're hanging out a virtual flag on social media that another person has died.
What actions is the NAACP taking to bring about those discussions of equality?
Well, we are moving the discussion so people could take action. The action for us is in November at the election poll. In order for there to be justice, in order for police officers to be held accountable, we have to have district attorney offices that truly believe that everyone should be afforded equal protection under the law.
One last question here. Taking everything that's happened this past week into consideration, what are you most hopeful for?
Well, we're hopeful that as we move forward, that nonviolent, peaceful protest is an indication that the system has broken down, that there is no true justice. But when the justice system actually works for all of the community and there are opportunities for all of the community, there will be no need for these type of protests. As NAACP, we absolutely oppose rioting. That never solves anything. But peaceful protest is a way for the citizens of this country to bring forth grievances of injustice as we see them.
Derek Johnson is the president and CEO of the NAACP, a leading U.S. human rights organization. U.S. officials are also looking to determine whether extremist groups are infiltrating these protests to deliberately tip peaceful demonstrations toward violence, and if foreign adversaries are behind a burgeoning disinformation campaign on social media. International Edition's Lori London gets an update on what is happening on the streets of Minneapolis with criminal defense attorney Jack Rice.
There's multiple kinds of people in the street right now. I think there are those people who are simply trying to get justice served. At the same time, there are others out there that seem to have an agenda. One of the groups that I absolutely know is here because I have people I know talking about it and seeing them on the streets, and these are white supremacists. They are here. Some about six blocks from where I live right now, there were white supremacists in the streets, and there are others who continue to come, apparently not from Minnesota, but they're coming for that reason too. So they are here as well, and that exacerbates all of this, because then the question is, what is this about? Is this about George Floyd, the man who was killed on Monday by this police officer, or is this about something else, a greater agenda? That's the question everybody has right now.
How can you be sure that these are white supremacists or white nationalists?
You have people with out-of-state plates. They have stickers on the backs of their cars that are white supremacist stickers. What that means is there's a certain cross that you will see that represents white supremacy. They had them on both of these SUVs. These SUVs were side by side. They had maps out on the hoods of their SUVs, and they were seen to be making decisions. This is very publicly, which is shocking that you would see this. This comes from somebody I know who's a former prosecutor, who's a veteran. He's a former sniper himself. He saw this and he said, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." And this was outside his house.
The officer that has been now charged, the one of four, the one who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd when he died, is expected to have a court appearance today. What is this hearing about?
The purpose of this appearance is called a first appearance to acknowledge what the charges are and then to set bail. Because at this point, that officer is in custody and he'll appear before a judge who will make that determination. They have to set a cash bail in Minnesota, so they can't hold him without bail. So there is going to be a number. My expectation is, in normal situations, I would expect somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. We'll see exactly what the judge does in this case, but that's the first step. At least then they will set for something called an omnibus date to give more time to figure out and get other evidence to the defense so they know where they're going to go next.
Jack Rice is a Minneapolis criminal defense attorney. He was speaking to International Edition's Lori London. And still to come up in today's program,
we have entered into a new era of spaceflight, getting these commercial partners up and getting them ready to be able to regularly take our astronauts to the International Space Station makes us less dependent on the Russian.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Have you ever read a science story that piqued your interest so much that you wanted to read more about the subject? You go to the internet in hopes of finding information that will clearly explain the topic. Instead, all you find are articles that only scientists can understand. The California Institute of Technology, Caltech, recently launched a new website that may provide you with the clear and dependable scientific and engineering information you're looking for. Called the Caltech Science Exchange, the website helps you make sense of popular and relevant scientific issues. Right now, you can find information that explains the science behind COVID-19, with new topics to be added in the months to come. You can find the Caltech Science Exchange at scienceexchange@caltech.edu. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The White House announced Sunday that it has delivered 2 million doses of hydroxychloroquine, or HCQ, to Brazil to help the South American country in its fight against the coronavirus. HCQ is a widely used malaria drug, and U.S. President Donald Trump, in a controversial move, has ignored his public health advisors and pushed for the use of the drug in the fight against the coronavirus, even though there is no hard evidence that the drug is effective against the virus. Trump recently announced that he has taken a round of HCQ, even though he says he does not have the coronavirus. The White House statement also said two countries have entered a joint research effort that will include randomized controlled clinical trials. These trials will help further evaluate the safety and efficacy of HCQ for both prophylaxis and the early treatment of the coronavirus. The World Health Organization has halted its trials on the drug for COVID-19 patients after several studies indicated it had little benefit and could be harmful. There are more infections in the United States and Brazil than anywhere else in the world. The United States has more than 1.7 million cases, while Brazil, which is emerging as the world's hotspot for the virus, has more than 514,000, that according to Johns Hopkins University. Globally, the university counts over 6.1 million confirmed cases and more than 372,000 deaths. Reuters' Carolyn Malone has this story of high-tech-powered robots in South Korea who are checking temperatures, enforcing physical distancing, and ensuring mask wearing.
There's a new high-tech greeter at the lobby of SK Telecom in Seoul, South Korea. It checks body temperatures, dispenses hand sanitizer, disinfects the floor, and can see who is and isn't wearing a mask. An AI-driven helper in the fight against COVID-19. SK employee Lim Yun-jun says she's realized how useful it can be.
At first, I felt awkward when I heard it was a robot doing this. But when my colleagues and I were talking to each other, the robot said, "Please move away from each other for social distance." I found myself walking away, and it was really impressive.
The robot uses 5G to talk with its server in real time. An alarm goes off if it detects someone with a temperature over 37.5 degrees Celsius. It can also see who isn't wearing a mask while blurring people's faces to protect privacy. One of the developers, Ra Kion Hwan, says it could be used to prevent many health problems.
Although it's named the coronavirus prevention robot, it's really a robot for any disease. Even if it's not coronavirus, the robot can be used to protect against outbreaks of other things, like influenza.
South Korea has largely contained its outbreak and is transitioning from an intensive lockdown to what officials call distancing in daily life. The autonomous robot is already helping to speed up people's return to work while reducing human contact.
That was Reuters reporter Carolyn Malone. Hong Kong police on Monday banned an annual vigil marking the Tiananmen crackdown anniversary, citing the coronavirus pandemic, the first time the gathering has been halted in three decades. The candlelight vigil, held on June 4th, usually attracts huge crowds and is the only place on Chinese soil where the commemoration is allowed. Last year's gathering was especially large and came just a week before 7 months of pro-democracy protests exploded onto the city streets, sparked initially by a plan to allow extraditions to the mainland. In addition, seven former British foreign ministers on Monday called on Prime Minister Boris Johnson to push G7 allies to set up an international monitoring group for Hong Kong in response to Beijing's tightening control over the city. United Nations aid agencies warn they will be forced to cut essential life-saving programs for millions of people in Yemen because they are broke. Lisa Schlein reports they are appealing to the international community to support humanitarian operations in the war-torn country at an aid pledging conference on Tuesday.
More than 5 years of war has brought Yemen to its knees. Thousands of people have been killed and wounded. Millions have been made homeless, and some 10 million are on the brink of famine. The country's fragile health system is near collapse. The United Nations calls Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. It warns conditions in the country could spin out of control as the looming coronavirus pandemic takes hold of the weakened population. The UN reports 80% of Yemen's population depends on international assistance for survival. However, relief agencies warn they are running out of money and will be forced to reduce or close essential programs. The World Food Program reports it needs nearly $900 million to continue delivering life-saving aid to millions. Among the most vulnerable, says WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers, are more than 1 million women and 2 million children who require nutritional treatment for acute malnutrition.
Of these children, around 360,000 are at risk of dying without treatment. WFP is doing everything we can to make sure no child or mother is left behind as COVID-19 poses yet another threat to Yemen children.
The UN Refugee Agency is urgently seeking $90 million to keep life-saving aid programs from shutting down. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu warns reducing or cutting humanitarian aid will severely impact nearly 1 million refugees and internally displaced people.
So some of the consequences of this underfunding will mean that 280,000 refugees and asylum seekers will no longer have access to basic services, including education, health, food, water, sanitation, hygiene, shelter, and essential protection services as well, which include registration, documentation, and specialized services for children.
The United Nations and Saudi Arabia are co-hosting a virtual pledging conference for Yemen on June 2nd. UN and private relief agencies are seeking $2.4 billion for the next 7 months. This will provide a humanitarian lifeline for 19 million people whose lives and livelihoods have been shattered by more than 5 years of devastating conflict. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hazardous weather delayed the first attempt, but days later, the skies cleared, and history was made as a SpaceX rocket carrying two American astronauts launched into space. On Sunday, in orbit above the Earth, the journey came to a successful end. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
The public-private partnership of NASA and SpaceX claimed victory Sunday as American astronauts docked with the International Space Station, or ISS. Roughly 19 hours after launching from Cape Canaveral in Florida, the Falcon 9 rocket carrying the Dragon capsule made history. It was the first launch into orbit from U.S. soil since 2011, and it was the first time ever a private company like SpaceX carried astronauts into space. NASA's Shaniqua Vereen.
We have entered into a new era of space flight, getting these commercial partners up and getting them ready to be able to regularly take our astronauts to the International Space Station makes us less dependent on the Russian, our Russian counterparts.
American astronauts relied on Russian rockets that get them to the ISS since 2011. Marine says a successful launch offers just another way to get to space and does not signal the end of that partnership. She says it's also a new beginning.
We are basically trying to reinvigorate America as well as the rest of the world's interest in the space program. We have Orion that's coming up, and that's going to launch the first woman and the next man on the moon, and after that, on to Mars.
The crew of the Dragon capsule aboard the Falcon 9 rocket was set to launch last week. Weather conditions then forced the reschedule to Saturday. The mission for NASA astronauts Doug Hurley and Bob Behnken will last roughly 110 days. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And you've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.